A wise man once said, to truly live, you must do one thing each day that scares you. Congratulations! You're listening to The Ron Van Dam Show. Scary, huh?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's The Ron Van Dam Show.
This is your choice.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Hey, thanks for coming by. It's The Ron Van Dam Show. Thank you so much. Guess who I am? All right, before we start the show, by law, I have to point out the exits in case there's a fire or some type of emergency. I will now point out the exits. Are you ready? There's one over there. There's one over there. Don't use that one. That doesn't go anywhere. The door doesn't open. There's one over... Oh, yeah, there's another one over there. And I forgot there's one over there. Let's just get the show started, huh? God, seriously? Welcome to the program. Thank you. Thank you. I know some of you just came here to pick up your dry cleaning. What is dry cleaning anyway? How can you clean something if it's dry? I don't know what it is. I don't know anybody personally who works in a dry cleaning shop. All I know is I drop off my clothes, they take them, and I feel a little bit like, am I ever going to see my clothes again? And then like a day or two later, I go back and I pick up my clothes like they've been in daycare for some reason, but just come out cleaner. I don't like giving other people my stuff. And then they charge me in order to clean and to watch over my clothes. Don't like that feeling. The person who works behind the counter at the dry cleaners does not speak English. And I'm not talking about broken English. No English whatsoever. And I don't know why that is. I go into any other store, they speak some English. My dry cleaners... Not at all. Which is fine, you know. That's fine, I guess. I mean, they don't speak English and I don't speak their language, so I guess, like, who am I? But I feel very weird giving them my shirts, giving them basically the shirt off my back. And then they give me a little piece of paper and I walk out and we didn't say anything. And I feel a little like, wait a minute, what did I just do? That's like giving somebody your car and then walking away and taking an Uber to go home. I must trust these people whom I cannot communicate with whatsoever. But it always works out somehow. I always get my shirts back, and then I feel complete again. Ron, you seem a little bit sad and confused. Yeah, I know. I gave somebody my shirts. I'm just hoping they come back. I'm hoping they take care of my shirts. My shirts haven't been off my back in a long time. They hang in my closet. That's their home. They know which hanger is theirs, my shirts. And I have some favorite shirts. Those are the ones that I send to the dry cleaners because I like to keep them clean. I care about my shirts. But now my shirts are not on their hangers at home in my closet. They're with some stranger who can't speak English. And then when they take the shirts behind the counter at the dry cleaners, The person doesn't love my shirts like I do. They take my shirts and they roll it up in a ball and they throw it in a bag. Hey, don't treat my shirts like that. Those are my shirts. I don't ball them up at home. Oh, buy shirts. I'll see you in a few days. You be good. Don't worry, Mr. Van Dam. We'll take care of your shirts, they say as if they spoke English. And then for a few days, I just feel this disconnection. I feel like I've lost a friend. Yeah. Ron, are you all right? No. I don't know where my shirts are. They took them and they sent them out to other strangers. I whine a lot. But the feeling of being reunited with my shirts when I go to pick them up is an amazing feeling. I feel the same way about parking my car in a garage. That's the strangest feeling of all, and I hate it. I live in the Boston area, and sometimes I have to go to Boston for both pleasure and sometimes business. And I park in a garage because I can park the car there and lock it up, and I feel okay. At least I've got some control over where my car is and what it's doing. But when you go to some of these swanky restaurants and there's some kid standing in front of the restaurant dressed in a costume that makes you think that they park cars for the restaurant, I get out of my car and I'm supposed to give them the keys to my car. And I stand there and I watch this person get in my car and drive it away. It's called valet parking. It's called someone stole my car with my permission. I always go through that scenario in my head with the valet parking. Where are they taking my car? Sometimes I go to New York City, stay in a hotel, because I don't own an apartment in New York anymore. So I stay in a hotel, and I drove to the city, and this guy comes out really well-dressed. Usually a guy. I don't think I've ever had a female valet parker. Why is that? That's kind of odd. I'm not being sexist. It just like has never happened to me. Anyway, this guy gets in my car. I give him the keys. He gives me a little ticket, just like the dry cleaner does. And he gets in my car and he drives away. But I don't know where he's going. He's taking my car and he's driving down the street until he's out of sight. And my immediate reaction is, hey, wait a minute. You stole my car. That's trust, man. That is like the definition of trust. At least when I'm valet parking in a restaurant, like they're parking behind a restaurant, you know, in a special lot. When I give them my car at a hotel in New York City, they're driving away. I don't know where they're going. They might be going up to Schenectady. I have no idea. Schenectady is a place in New York, which is far away from the city. Just for your reference. And then, after my trip to New York City, it's time for me to get my car. I go to the concierge. I don't even know what that means. I give them the ticket, and then I stand there for about half an hour waiting for my car to show up, and my immediate thought, my car is gone. What's taking them so long? Where did they park my car in New Jersey? And I get nervous. And that's what I'm going to talk about today, because there's a point to all of these examples of giving your stuff to somebody else, giving them the responsibility, taking control out of your hands and giving something to somebody else, giving them the control. I cannot sit comfortably with that. I'm not a control freak. I'm a freak, but I'm not a control freak. But it does concern me, and I do go through this mental process of, oh my God, What if they just stole my car? Oh my God, what if they took my favorite shirts and they're gone and I'll never see my shirts again? It's a loss of control. They're out of my handling. I have a neighbor who lives in my neighborhood, which is the definition, by the way, of a neighbor. They don't have to be right next door to you. They can be anywhere in the immediate vicinity. It's a woman. She is very different than I am. Not just the fact that she's a woman and I'm not, but she has a life of I don't give a shit. And I love that. What a luxury it is. If something bad happens, it's, well. That's just the way it is. She doesn't care about much of anything. It's what a luxury to live that kind of life. You know, every once in a while I tell you my favorite word is whatever. It's not my favorite word. It's the word that I would love to feel. I would love to, something bad happened. Oh, whatever. Things happen in life, but everything will be fine tomorrow. I try to live that, but I can't. Instead, people like myself and probably people like you, our lives fall apart because of an incident that is out of your control. But this woman that I refer to, if something happens, she goes, what can you do? What are you going to do? And she goes on and she moves on and she's still happy and chipper. I want to be you. Is she vapid? No, she's quite an intelligent woman. But she's got some type of mechanism where she can just literally just like move on like immediately. And it's not that she's blocking it out, the negativity. It just doesn't happen for her. What a luxury of life. Not to care that much about something. Is it caring or is it a loss of control? And that's the question. I don't go to a therapist because I value my money and I don't throw it out the window. I don't know. I've talked about this 1,000 times on the show. Therapists are simply repeat what you did, the last sentence that you said. And they repeat that to you and say, well, why do you feel like that? Why do you think that is? And then, like, what am I paying you to just take my last statement and turn it into a question back at me? Is that what the charge is? So no, I don't do the therapy. Maybe we all should, shall we? You know, times are difficult, but you know, times are always difficult. Times are always difficult. We just tend to forget the comparison. We always think that these are the worst times ever. No, they weren't. There were times that were much worse than this. There was a Great Depression where people literally couldn't eat and had no place to live and couldn't afford to breathe. There were a couple of world wars and other wars that took the lives of loved ones and played havoc with the economy, etc. There were recessions. There were tragedies. You know, we went through a gigantic disease that killed millions of people across the globe. We had the Twin Towers collapse, our country was attacked for the first time, other than Pearl Harbor. I mean, there were some shitty, shitty, shitty presidents, and others that were just okay. There were a lot of things, and those are just the outside society incredible roadblocks. Then you've got your own in your own life with your family and people you love and know that befall things that befall you as well because you love them and you feel for them and you feel for what they're going through. There's a lot of stuff going on. There are a million things that could happen at any moment. But that's the way it is. And as this lady who lives in my neighborhood would say, well, that's just what happens. Now, what are you going to do? Tomorrow's another day. Yeah, you're right. Easy to say, hard to do. But look, we're spending time together, you and me. I don't know who you are. That's fine. Doesn't matter. Anyway, Ron, this is a terribly depressing program today.
I know it is. I could talk about bologna sandwiches. Do you want me to talk about bologna sandwiches? How it's nothing other than a piece of bologna between two pieces of bread. It can kill you eventually, but yet we eat it every day. I could talk about that. I could talk about hot dogs, which is basically bologna in a phallic form. Because the holiday's coming up, you know, and we eat hot dogs. I could do a whole hot dog show. It would bore the out of you. But I could do that. So there's a lot of roads I can take. By the way, I did get my shirts back from the dry cleaner. And I've worn them and everything was fine. I worried about nothing. I did get my car back eventually from the hotel valet service. Cost me a lot of money, but I did get it. I thought, oh my God, did they put any scratches or dents on my car? What do I do? How do I sue them? Who do I go after? No, there was no problem with that. But I went through that scenario in my head anyway. So in those two instances, everything turned out fine. On to the next. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a short commercial break. When we come back, I have a guest that will be joining us. But first, this little piece of advice for everybody.
Give the gift that says, I love you. The gift that says, happy birthday. The gift that says, get well soon. The gift that says, you're the reason I went into the priesthood. The gift that says, congratulations on not getting indicted. The gift that says, I want to cover you in warm chocolate pudding. The gift that says, good luck in clown college. The gift that says, thanks for removing my unsightly wart. The gift that says, sorry about giving you food poisoning. The gift that says, I'll see you in hell. The gift that says, remember the good times we had in prison. The gift that says, I want to make sweet love to you on the white sand beaches of Rio while your hot cousin watches. The gift that says, thank you for the kidney. The gift that says, you deserve all the best, but this will have to do. The gift that says, thanks, Jesus. Whatever you want to say, you can say it beautifully with a timeless gift from Phyllis Gorman's House of Macaroni Art on Route 94 just past the Rotary, across from Sweaty Palmer's Adult Emporium.
Kristen Zeman joins us. She's a former police chief of the Aurora, Illinois Police Department. And Isabella Giannini is Senior Vice President, Law Enforcement Strategic Initiatives in Exxon. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Well, we're talking about first responders. I mean, we all thank that because the first responders are the first responders. And without them, we wouldn't have a response. So thank you. But we're trying to get some greater awareness going here. Thank you for both being here, first of all.
Happy to be here.
Okay. All right, so let's see. Kristen, tell me exactly what we're talking about here. This is in regards to PTSD.
It is. We know that 80% of first responders, and when we talk about first responders, we are talking about police, EMT, firefighters, dispatchers, all of those who respond to traumatic events. And sadly and notoriously throughout the profession of especially law enforcement, there's been a stigma in asking for help. I've been in law enforcement for 30 years, and throughout my tenure, I can recall times where I was told, hey, if you can't handle it, then get out of the profession.
Oh.
And that is not working for us these days. We see greater events. 1 in 3 officers suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. And so we have to come up with new ways of building resilience in our officers, because they are taking care of our communities, so we have to take care of them.
Yeah. I mean, I would assume, not having been a police officer, that there is something innate in a human being where if they see somebody in trouble, they help, period. There's no question about it. Their body just goes in that direction.
Yeah.
I guess pretty much that's the trick, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's both on duty and off duty.
Yeah.
I mean, we are told that we need to stay alert at all times. There's no such thing as off duty.
Yeah.
And so I call it the film reel in your head. And keep in mind that these traumatic events don't have to be the ones that we think of, like a mass shooting.
Right.
Just responding to a car accident where, you know, perhaps, you know, children are harmed.
Yeah.
You know, insert any incident there where they see, you know, death and harm, you know, come to another human being. That plays that film reel over and over in their heads, and you know it can become overwhelming. And if they don't have the resources and places to turn to, then you know it just starts to affect them from the inside out, and that's where we see it manifesting in their lives, both personally and professionally.
Yeah, I mean, one wonders how that couldn't. I mean, why that wouldn't be the case? I mean, how can you not bring home that scenario in your head and just erase it? You can't do that. So
you can't. Yeah.
And of course, we put it on a par with what soldiers go through in the military, seeing these awful situations that maybe not every day, but they know any second that can happen. Same kind of response.
And in the military, they actually build in more resources, and that's where law enforcement has fallen behind on that. And even firefighters do better than we do in law enforcement. So that's what we're trying to fix.
Yeah. Firefighters would go through continual training because I guess when they're responding, they are responding to a tragedy automatically. Not necessarily. There could be a cat in a tree.
Yeah, no, not necessarily, but here's what they've built in. They built in during, so for example, they live at the firehouse, so they're 24 on,
right.
Typically 48 off, right? And
right.
So after an event, they all get together and they do a critical stress debrief, and they're much better at it than we are. And think about law enforcement. You show up on a scene, then the scene comes to a conclusion, and you're on to the next 911 call.
Yeah.
And so you don't have time, nor have we made it mandatory to sit down and debrief a situation. And we failed our first responders by not doing that.
I see that. Yeah. Yeah. Firefighters are in teams. Police officers, maybe there's another officer with you. But other
That's right.
than, yeah, yeah. And I've seen where officers are pulled out of an emergency to go to another emergency in the middle of the first emergency. It gets crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even in that example that you just gave, where maybe they're with a partner officer, there's still that stigma.
Right.
Nobody's going to turn to someone and say, hey, man, you know, that was really hard and I need help.
Yeah.
And the truth is that's exactly what we need to do, is say that one was bigger than me. And, you know, I need some help here. So that's where these resources are built in with Axon, and we're so grateful for the program.
Yeah. Let me ask you, just out of curiosity, is it the case where first responders, especially police officers, would find that it doesn't show pride to ask for help in this regard, that I have to look tough and be tough because that's what the public needs from me?
Yeah, I don't know if I would use the word pride, but I will say most definitely weakness.
Okay.
Is that none of us wants to appear weak, and
yeah.
we have that in our mind, which we know is not accurate, is that asking for help is weakness. And what we're trying to convey is the opposite. First of all, we see the suicide rate and, of course, the PTSD rate, which tells us that is not working for us.
Mm-hmm.
And so the concept here is changing the culture of law enforcement so that it becomes courageous to ask for help. And what we understand now is you cannot get to courage without walking through vulnerability.
Yeah. How do you turn that around so that so you walk away with something positive after being traumatized by something so negative?
I think one of the things in what we learn in post-traumatic stress is to find meaning. And not only that, but then to recognize when you are affected by a situation, the lack of sleep, the perhaps turning to a substance, perhaps losing interest, being irritable, all of those things. So number one is recognizing the signs. And I think that's what we really have to do, you know, and the other is to change the culture. And I'll give you a great example. I had a mass shooting in my city. And one of the reasons that the officers turned to practitioners for help is because one brave officer broke down and actually in front of all of his comrades broke down and showed emotion. And he gave permission to everyone else just with that great act of courage. And I'll tell you what, I was brought up that there's no crying in police work, and nothing could be further from the truth. It was that man that honestly, it's often the first follower that you know starts a movement, and it was him. And so it's that kind of act of courage that are going to change the culture of our profession.
Isabella, how does technology play a part in something so psychological?
Right. So this concept of you have to be the toughest in society, that, to what Chief Seaman was saying, really kind of shakes someone when they feel like maybe they're not, or maybe they're not living up to that. And so Axon Aid has created no-cost resources, the most recent around post-traumatic growth, which is the concept of reworking the impact of stress and trauma. Mm-hmm. And it's worked wonders for responders. It's a 5-phase program where you understand the meaning, where you came from, how this trauma plays a role in your future. There's service components, there's education, there's disclosure. Just talking about your experience helps you relate to others. And as Chief Seaman mentioned, once one person stands up and says, hey, I went through that, I struggled, it was really hard, here's where I am and here's how I came out of it, it starts a movement and it helps people understand that this is normal, this is okay, and you have to put in the work to overcome that trauma so that you are the toughest in society.
Yeah. It's interesting how you've this conversation has raised so much understanding as well as awareness. Lay people, such as myself and most of us, when something tragic happens or we see something horrific, that stays with the rest of our lives. And some people get destroyed from that one incident. You multiply that by 1,000 as to what these officers see on a daily basis, most of them. You can start to understand just how that can just eat away at you really fast.
Absolutely. We've talked about this a lot, that, you know, what an officer sees in the course of their, you know, just, you know, 40-hour work week is a lot of what most people don't even see in a lifetime.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. Okay. Well, we have to get out of here. Where can we go for more information?
For all of our resources, no cost and available online, you can go to axon.com/aid and sign up for our newsletter, reach out to our team, and access everything from there.
It's a pleasure speaking to the both of you, and thank you for doing what you do, by the way. Well, that'll do it for me today. Thank you to my guest, and thank you to you for coming by today and spending some time with me. Sounds so nursery schoolish, doesn't it? I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new program. I'm going to use like similar words, but talk about other things that I didn't talk about today. Through the use of words. But until that time, what the hell's wrong with me? But until that time arrives, I wish you peace.